This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
It may be hyperbole to say that school shootings have become a way of life in the U.S., but it seems like they're no longer shocking. They certainly have become more frequent over the past few years, and students have become much more vocal about demanding that something be done.
My friend who I lost in the shooting, his two twin sisters were in the living room of the house, and they were also in Sandy Hook. They were right down the hallway. And they came up to me and they said, "We saw dead people today."
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll take you to a panel discussion where four students from around the country spoke out about their experiences with school violence. We'll also spend an academic minute comparing these students' protests with those against the Vietnam War. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. This year, on February 14th, 17 students were shot to death at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. It was by no means the first or most deadly school shooting in this decade. But one thing was different. After this shooting, the students began speaking out and fighting back against political leaders and gun manufacturers and their supporters, culminating in the March for Our Lives rally in Washington, D.C. and other cities around the country. Last month, I attended a panel at the Education Writers Association's national seminar in Los Angeles, where two survivors of the Parkland shooting and two other gun violence survivors spoke. The panel was moderated by Evie Blod, a writer at Education Week. In February, David Hoag was a senior at Stoneman Douglas High School. On the day of the shooting, he began recording video and posting it online.
When the school was being shot up, I decided to start recording because I figured whether or not this was a drill, the fact that we even would have had to consider having a drill if it was one, would have, I think taking a video there would have really shown the current state of America that we're in. Okay. And the other thing was that if it wasn't, hopefully if we did die in that classroom, I was hoping that our voices would carry on even if our souls wouldn't. And I think that's the power that video has, and that's what I was really trying to convey in that. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to make sure that nobody has to see their kid go through this again. I don't think anybody, we shouldn't be living in an America where we learn to accept these things and they continue to happen, where we've seen Parkland happen. And there was about 39 days of media coverage, which is pretty good because of the march and everything. But now it's like, okay. And it's terrifying to me because right now, what keeps me up at night is thinking that there's somebody alive right now that will not be alive at this time tomorrow and has never even thought about gun violence. But everybody around them will have to for the rest of their lives, because they don't even know that person's going to die.
And what were some of the things that your classmates were telling you while you were interviewing them?
So one of the most interesting things that like one of my classmates brought up was, it was the day before their 18th birthday, and they're actually a junior NRA member, and they're going to go to the shooting range for their birthday. And they obviously changed their, completely changed their perspective on the situation. Mm-hmm. And the questions that I was really asking them was, how do you feel? Just trying to get a sense of the room in that situation and try to, if we did die, if these videos were shown to congressmen and different politicians, hopefully they would actually get some sense of morality and do something about it so that we don't have to have these things happen. We've seen over the past 19 years of inaction since Columbine, where people have, there have been thousands and millions of people that have been affected by this, that have been working every single day for years now to try to fix this, but because our politicians won't work with them, these things have been allowed to continue to happen.
Hoag was in a different building on the campus than the shooter, but he soon realized that this was not a drill.
The second that I realized it was real was when we started hearing the helicopters and reading the headlines online.
Okay.
From my other classmates, because we had been told throughout the year that we were going to have a drill with blanks and fake blood and actors and stuff, and that's what I thought it was, and that's what I think a lot of us thought it was.
Okay.
Because these things aren't uncommon now, and we had been talking a lot with our teachers about what to do in these type of situations, and we started implementing systems of locking the doors at school whenever we were there. And one of the most horrifying things that I remember asking my teacher is, there's a glass pane in our window for people to look through,
right.
And I remember asking my TV production teacher, why wouldn't somebody just shoot through that?
Okay.
And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
In the days after the shooting at Parkland, Emma Gonzalez became one of the loudest voices and most visible faces of the anti-gun protest movement. Her speech at a gun control rally in Fort Lauderdale 3 days after the shooting went viral, and she gave an emotional address at the March for Our Lives rally in D.C. She was also a senior at Stoneman Douglas High School on February 14th and was president of the school's Gay Straight Alliance, the GSA. She talked about preparing for that first speech just days after the shooting, including when she held up her AP government notes during the address.
First and foremost, somebody called me and said, hey, school board wants to talk to you. And I was like, yikes, they've been watching my interviews. They want me to stop talking. Uh-huh. And the woman was like, hey, we're having a rally tomorrow and we want you to speak. And I was like, okay. Oh, all right. So I was like, I'm not going to write this tonight. It's 10 o'clock. It's going to be terrible. So I woke up at like 8 in the morning and started writing then. And it took about 3 hours. I was writing all the way up to the podium. The day of the shooting, we learned about the NRA. We were learning about interest groups, and we learned about the NRA. And I actually skipped my period of AP government so that I could go earlier in the day. Because it was Valentine's Day, we were doing, as GSA, we had printed proclamations of love, which is basically like marriage certificate Valentine's. Where you're like, I love you, take this. It's evidence and proof that I love you. And it was like, it was pretty cute. Uh-huh. And so I was doing that for all lunch, and if I hadn't gone to Gov earlier, then I wouldn't have been able to do that. And we actually had a fire drill earlier that day, which made the second one really strange. Mm-hmm. But so I took my Gov notes, because I wanted to, like, when I said Tinker v. Des Moines, I wanted to hold up the part that was Tinker v. Des Moines. Okay. But I was a little more focused on being able to read through tears that I wasn't able to lift up specific parts. But I did lift up the notes.
And we've heard since then that your AP government teacher is actually a Republican, that he's been highly influential to a lot of you who've been involved. Can you tell me a little bit about what's so compelling about his classes and what you've learned from him?
First of all, Jeff Foster, what a guy. Thank you. He's speaks a mile a minute. He actually was talking about an interview he did, and he was like, oh my God, what did I just say? Like, I just listened to that. I said 8 sentences in 8 seconds, and I could not understand a word. But he speaks really fast. So you're paying attention because you're trying to decipher every word.
Okay.
And he would, like, he'll do an entire lecture in a half hour. Like, you are done. And then you just watch John Oliver for the rest of the hour. And, like, you're, like, getting all these, like, really important facts that are, like, being corroborated by what you just learned. Uh-huh. So everything's coming together. It's just, it's a really good class. And he's really funny, and he curses like a sailor. Don't tell anybody I said that. I know there's so many cameras. Everybody's recording what I'm saying. It's fine. He's wonderful.
Obviously, this incident happening was a real catalyst, but was what you learned about guns and what you knew about guns already enough to make you feel like, you know, before the incident, that you wanted to do something? I mean,
before the incident, not at all. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something, but I wasn't actually going to get out there and do something.
Okay.
And the way that we learned about the NRA was very, like, unbiased, just straight up.
Right.
The NRA has a lot of money, and they pay off these people so that they are being acted in their favor. And that's what an interest group is.
Okay.
And that was the conversation.
The next student we'll listen to is Alex King, a senior at North Lawndale Prep in Chicago. He's a member of the school's Peace Warriors, a group that provides support to students who have lost loved ones to gun violence. These students advocate for more funding for mental health clinics and schools in low-income neighborhoods and have become leaders in the national youth movement against gun violence. Alex says he took an unusual route to becoming a peace warrior.
I've been a peace warrior for 4 years now, and I got involved in peace warriors, first of all, for a shirt. So the way it's actually set up is our school uniforms are either long sleeve, short sleeve, button up, I'm okay, hot, because we start school in August. I'm like, oh man, it's so hot, I don't want to wear this. And on Thursdays, I saw these different shirts. There wasn't no button up. I'm okay. So where can I find this shirt? And they was like, oh, you have to become peace warrior. I'm like, oh, what is that? And they was like, oh, go speak to your counselor. So I run upstairs. I want to be a peace warrior. They okay, so you have to come to a train and do all this. I'm, oh, man, I got to do all this for a shirt?
Yeah, when do I get the shirt, right?
I also was told there would be free food. So that got me on board, too. but it got more deeper than that, actually, after I fully became a peace warrior, because it was like that sense of family, that structure.
Okay. Keep going.
That we had someone lean on and things of that nature. When we are down in our worst, we have somebody that's up at their highest to lift us up. And it's just what we do is we go around the communities, and we're actually trying to take this nationally now, where we go teach King and Nonviolence, the way of Dr. Martin Luther King, and just trying to make... Well, we started with the community, but now we're trying to make the world a safer place, to just get them solutions on how to deal with problems instead of impacting with violence and negatively.
Yeah, awesome. I think I read that the Peace Warriors, every time someone in your school loses a family member, you meet with them, and that there's been 160 people this year who've lost family members?
Yes, and so... Yeah, that's a lot. That's a big number.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But yes, every time someone loses a family member or a loved one, what we do at North Lundale is we do condolence runs where we go to their class level first, and we get as many students that want to sign a card stating sorry for your loss or whatever quote you want to put on, just telling them, we're with you. We're behind you every step of the way. You're not fighting this battle alone. And after we go to their grade level, we go to the other grade levels. We go to teachers, their teachers. And then once we get all, because we have a nice amount of students, so we have like more than one card, a letter, and we get it all filled out. And then after that, we put it in a bag and we put some candy in there. And if that student decides to come to school the next day or any other day, however, we know that it's very stressful when you lose someone and then have to come and do work. We know that most times people don't like to do that. So if they are in class, we pull them out in the hallways. We just tell them that we're here with them. They can come to any peace way. They can come to anybody in the school that's willing to talk and listen to them. And then we present them with the bag, the candy, we hug them, we tell them if they ever need to talk, they can come to us, and we send them back to class, hopefully with a smile on their face.
The fourth student on the panel is Jackson Middleton. He was an 11-year-old fifth grader at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, when 27 people were shot to death in November of 2012. He describes what happened that day after sitting under a table in his class for 4 hours with his school in lockdown.
After 4 hours in lockdown, someone opened the door to our room, and I remember my entire class screaming and freaking out because we thought that was it. And it was a police officer and a security guard. They opened the door and they said, go back to class. You guys are going to meet up and then you guys are going to go home. So my dad picked me up early from school and I went home. And then you turn on the TV and they're doing flyovers of Newtown and Sandy Hook Elementary School. And at the time it was 18 dead. And, you know, I think 8 more injured, and there were people being rushed to the hospital. And then my mom was talking to me on the phone for a little bit, and we got a call from our family friends who said, they said, come over to the house, the Posners, their son, they just got the news. So we went over to our friend's house, and we picked their kid up because they didn't want him to be there to experience that. And, you know, there were 3 police cars in the driveway, and the parents were upstairs sitting in a dark room and they weren't there. And I will remember this for the rest of my life. Noah Posner, someone, my friend who I lost in the shooting, his 2 twin sisters were in the living room of the house. And they were also in Sandy Hook. They were right down the hallway. And they came up to me and they said, we saw dead people today. Mm-hmm. And that was like such, and you know, also I was 11 years old. So I knew what was going on, but at the same time, I didn't know what was going on. It was all this kind of unreal thing that wasn't happening. You know, it was not real. And that was my day. And my siblings and I sat in the basement of my house and we watched Obama's speech and were like, what's happening? Our boring little town in the middle of nowhere is being broadcasted in every country in the entire world. Mm-hmm. And there's 26 people who aren't coming home and families are destroyed forever. What's happening?
Still to come, we'll listen to more from these 4 students about how gun violence has changed their lives. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett, and today we're listening to segments from a panel discussion featuring four students whose lives were changed by gun violence. This was recorded at the Education Writers Association's National Seminar, which was held this May in Los Angeles. The panel lasted an hour, so we only have time to bring you some highlights of these students' voices.
It's still hard for a lot of people to accept. You know, there's a new Sandy Hook Elementary School, and, you know, if you weren't from there, if you never knew what happened, you would go there and maybe you wouldn't even know that it happened at all, because it hurts people so much to talk about it that they don't want to talk about it. They were so young, and it was just nothing that anyone could have ever imagined.
I was seeing young brothers and sisters of innocent people whose lives were taken away, walking up to the memorials of their sisters and brothers crying, and it was like they have to grow up without a person they've been seeing their whole life.
Adults were looking at this in a single-faceted way. Nobody was addressing the whole problem. If you don't address the whole problem, it's never going to be solved, because there's always going to be aspects that are never addressed, because everybody's getting hurt by this. It's not just schools. If you just address schools, then Las Vegas is still going to happen. So is Charleston. And we can't let that happen.
Death anywhere is still death everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we're all affected, not in the same situation, but we all have people around us dying as a result of this. And the fact that last year, not including suicides, there are 15,549 deaths. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, if we had 15,549 stories, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
You don't need an AR-15 to protect yourself in bed from a robber at night. You don't need an AR-15 to have fun at a shooting range. Go join the army if you want to have fun shooting off a weapon and serve your country, excuse my language.
In Chicago, we have some of the strictest gun laws, but what does that mean when you can go literally like to your next door neighbor, Indiana, and go to Chuck's and get one and be back in Chicago in less than 30 minutes to fire it off?
Both Democrats and Republicans will refuse to acknowledge these subjects because they're too touchy when they're costing our government money, costing lives, and letting the future of America bleed out. And that's something unacceptable, and we all have to work to fix, because right now the adults aren't doing it. Well, the adults are doing it. Many of them are. But the politicians are not, and we have to hold them accountable.
This isn't just an issue that we care a lot about. This is a part of us now. This
right.
is our lives, and even in, you know, the short time that, you know, Em and David have revolutionized this movement, it's become everything to them. And that's what it does to you. When you experience something like this and you take action, you're doing it for the people that aren't here anymore, and you're doing it for the people that you lost and the experiences that you had to have, so that people will never again have to experience that like you did. And I think that no matter how busy we get throughout our lives, or, you know, when we go to college and we do other things, it's not like we're just going to forget that it happened. So we're always going to be motivated to keep pushing that. We're always going to be motivated to galvanize people together and ignite youth to speak up and use their voices, and everyone. It doesn't just have to be youth as well. So
gotcha.
Especially over the course of, in a long time. For me, it's been a long time, and I'm still going, because it won't go away if I don't think about it. You know, it's always going to be there, so you might as well do something about it.
What I love is the fact that people sent us to high school so that we could learn stuff, and then are amazed that we paid attention. And that, I mean, they're like, you're always on that phone, you're not paying attention. Like, well, my teacher kind of takes our phones away during class. We have cubby pockets. That's where they live. Also, what I'm learning about, you know, the NRA, I'm kind of paying attention, because that's messed up. We were, like, being shoved into college from senior, junior year to college years. Like, you're supposed to write your essays, you're supposed to have all of the techniques and everything ready to go so that when you go to college, you are an adult, you are fully fledged, you're ready to go. And now they're like, you're incredible. You should be the president. No, I just tell the truth. I'm like the president. Like, maybe that should be the standard, is that everybody tells the truth when they're confronted with information.
We don't want to be defined by this tragedy, because so much of the time, you know, I greet people and they go, where are you from? And I go, Newtown. And it's this look on their face. And you're like, I don't want to have a tattoo of... Right. Tragedy and sadness.
David Hoag and Emma Gonzalez were seniors at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Alex King, a senior at North Lawndale Prep in Chicago and a member of the school's Peace Warriors, and Jackson Middleton, he's now a 16-year-old student at Newtown High School in Newtown, Connecticut. This session was moderated by Evie Blod, a writer at Education Week. And our thanks again to the Education Writers Association for providing a scholarship so we could attend this year's national seminar in Los Angeles. Now, we, of course, had to do a ton of editing to fit this into our time slot, but you can watch this full session at the Education Writers Association's website. That's EWA.org. How do today's student protests against gun violence compare with the anti-war protests of the Vietnam era? That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
There's been an increase in student activism after recent mass shootings. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Jerusha Connor, associate professor of education at Villanova University, compares this movement with another politically charged time in our history.
The students involved in the Never Again movement are younger than the student activists who led the anti-Vietnam War movement. Nonetheless, there are many parallels between the two movements, which mean that the Never Again students might well prevail. Both groups of student activists were moved to action because they refused to tolerate being the casualties of political inaction any longer. What was at stake for the Vietnam War protesters was the same thing that is at stake for the Never Again students, their very lives. Both movements emerged in the wake of a dramatic resurgence in student activism. Just as the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the Berkeley Free Speech Students challenged the status quo in the early 1960s, student activists recently have effected significant changes on their college campuses. Like their 1960-era forebears, the Never Again students understand that the violence they are targeting disproportionately affects low-income youth of color, and they have adopted an intersectional perspective. Though student-led, both movements became intergenerational, forged broad coalitions, and attracted celebrity allies. Both groups of student protesters have been publicly disparaged. President Johnson and his allies questioned the integrity and patriotism of the peace activists. Similarly, the Never Again students have been called the pawns of adults and dismissed as too young and emotional to be taken seriously. Finally, like the Vietnam War, the epidemic of mass shootings in this country has lasted for far too long and claimed too many innocent lives. For the anti-war protesters, the tide turned when they were joined by veterans who could speak directly to the horrors of war. Now that student survivors of school shootings are joining the parents and youth organizers who have long been demanding gun reform, parlaying their grief and trauma into a clarion call for action, the tide around gun control seems to be turning as well.
That was Jerusha Connor of Villanova University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.